American songwriter, we had the opportunity to talk to Drew of Satsang over Zoom video. Drew talks about where he grew up and how he got into music. He talked about getting an electric guitar. Very soon after that, getting an acoustic guitar and just being really, really drawn to the sound of the acoustic guitar. He started writing songs in high school and performing at an open mic night. From there, he recorded various demos and eventually recorded The Story of You in his bedroom, which is their most streamed album. One of the songs on the record has like 6 million streams, 3, 4 million streams. I think it's got like over 17 million as an entire record, which is insane. It's something he did in his bedroom. He talks about being offered a tour with Michael Franti to the most recent record his band recorded in a barn in Montana and getting signed to Side One Dummy. You can watch the interview with Drew and myself on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Bringing Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Satsang. Thank you so much for doing this. Our podcast is on your journey in music and how you got to where you are now. And we'll talk about your new record coming out as well.
Sweet.
Awesome. I did read you're back in Montana now. Are you originally born and raised there?
Kind of. I was born here in Montana, but I moved to Iowa with my mom when I was like 8, but we would come back every summer to see my dad. Mm-hmm. So we would always do at least a month in the summers out here. And then I lived in Chicago for a nice chunk of time. But I really moved out here about 11 years ago, just to kind of get my shit together. You know, I was struggling with addiction and just kind of spinning out. Mm-hmm. So came to Montana to kind of start over, and really glad I did. I wouldn't live anywhere else, I don't think.
Wow. That's 11 years then. So you've been sober 11 years?
Nah, it didn't stick.
Oh, okay. I was like,
coming up on 9.
That's still good, man. I got almost mm-hmm. 4, but that's 11.
Congrats, dude. That's
9,
awesome.
That's huge, man. That's really awesome. Yeah. Very good. I mean, congratulations. That's great.
Likewise.
Cool, man. Well, so you're jumping between Idaho, you said, and Montana?
Iowa.
Oh, Iowa. Sorry, Iowa. Yeah. What was that like? Like, was there a music scene in both towns you were in?
Well, I wasn't really exposed to much music in Montana. I didn't know much that was going on there, but on Iowa, grew up going to, you know, punk and some hardcore shows. But really, you know, where live music, I think, really grabbed me was when I was kind of introduced to like jam bands and bluegrass, and mm-hmm. Where going to shows became a lot more of just going to see a show. You know, it was like a whole event. You know, sure. You go with like a crew of 10 people, you know, it's going to get weird. And, you know, that was what really made me fall in love with live music, was going and seeing jam bands and bluegrass bands at that late 90s, early 2000s era.
That's awesome. What was the first instrument you learned to play?
Guitar.
Okay. Well, when did you start playing guitar?
I think I got my first guitar when I was in like 6th grade. It was like a shitty washboard electric. and it's really interesting, man, because, you know, at first I was like, I want to be in a punk band and I just want to be able to play bar chords and sing. Mm-hmm. And then I got like a $150 acoustic guitar, and there's something about the acoustic guitar that I fell in love with, man. And it just made me want to be a songwriter. And I still to this day listen to punk rock every week. Sure. You know, it's still in regular rotation, but you know, when I found the acoustic guitar, it became pretty apparent the kind of music that I was drawn towards creating was writing songs, you know?
Yeah. That's amazing. Were you writing songs kind of like, when did you get the acoustic? Or is it pretty soon like after you had the electric?
Eighth grade, you know, but yeah, sure. I started writing songs like right away, real shitty ones, you know, but like, you know, when you're in like 8th and 9th grade, it's like, everything feels so intense, and
of course,
you know, it's like, so like if you like a girl, you're writing these like deep like Michael W. Smith love songs that you think are real, you know. It's like, you have no idea. You have no idea.
That's awesome. Did you play in a band or anything when you're in middle school, high school, or is it just basically singer songwriter?
Well, in high school, I wouldn't say I played in a band, but I would take over this open mic, you know. So I made this little demo. A friend of mine worked at the college radio station, and he knew enough of how to run the gear so I could make a shitty little demo.
Oh, cool.
And I started hustling them at school during lunch, you know, selling them. But then I was like, oh, I'm going to play this open mic at Java Joe's in downtown Des Moines. And like a shitload of people came, like a couple hundred kids from the high school came.
Wow.
And then for about a month until they kicked me out, they wouldn't let me play there anymore.
Oh, why was that?
Every week. Because it was just like a party, man. Like people would be drinking in the parking lot and shit. It was a coffee shop, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it'd be like
just the high school kids hanging out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Before they go into the show and everything.
Yeah. Everybody that's coming hilarious. In smelling like weed, you know?
Right. Of course.
And then, yeah, that was it. I didn't really perform. But when I moved to Chicago, I met Carl, who's my bass player and kind of co-produces everything with me and engineers everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't really perform a lot, but we were always recording, recording, which is really weird. Cause usually for people it's the other way, you know, and Carl and I were just like, we'd just be like, okay, cool, man. We're going to set up the room and we're going to play Dylan covers today. We're going to set up the room and we're going to just jam and see what happens, you know? And like, we both made EPs. But Carl was really trying to like get his chops down as an engineer and producer. And mm-hmm. he liked my songs. So he was always making me record them, and we lived together. So it was just what we did, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's cool. And then when did that kind of leave the recording studio and start playing out?
I moved to Montana to get my shit right. And then it's funny. I had Carl on my podcast and I'd never really looked at our story the way that he explained it, where I was like, yeah, you're right. The Herb relationship has pretty much just always been recording music. So we didn't see each other for like 5 years, but we kept in touch.
Mm-hmm.
And then he flew out for my birthday and of course brought all of his recording shit. We hung out in my base, you know, where I live in like one of the most beautiful places in the country, and we didn't leave my basement, man. We were just like playing John Prine covers and shit and just recording music again together. And then soon after that, I was like, bro, you should just join this band with me. Like, you should just come out, go all in. And he did. He did. He moved out to Montana and joined up, and he's been the engineer and co-producer of everything we've put out.
Wow. And that's when you guys formed Satsang, was that when he actually moved out?
Yeah, so it was me and a mandolin player for like 2 years. And then Carl moved out. And then pretty much right after Carl moved out, mandolin player dropped out. We got a drummer and kind of made like a band, you know, like a real band.
Sure. Cool. And did you record a record right away before
Well, it's actually really funny, man. So, like the story of you, which is our most streamed record, it's not a real drummer. You know, it's a fake MIDI drums.
Oh, really? Okay, and, that's cool.
We recorded it in my room, and it's so funny because that's still by and large is the most listened to record that we've made.
Yeah, I mean, one of the songs.
But yeah, like, we made
a few of them have over a million, you know, million, 3 million, 6 million. Like,
yeah, I know. Yeah, it's
that's
crazy.
Just Spotify.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. The story of you had like 17 million streams last year, and I just think about it all the time. Carl and I made it in 3 days in my bedroom with one microphone.
Oh my gosh!
I know,
that's amazing. I've heard that story before, like not very often at all, but like where it's like, yeah, this bass or this bedroom recording, you know, they ended up just using it and it became, you know, this huge hit or whatever. Like, that's so fascinating to me.
Yeah. Well, it is to me too, because, you know, we're musician wise, we're like 100 times better than we were when we were in that bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I hear it and I get the lyrical content, you know, and I still love playing all of those songs, but just as an artist, I'm like, man, we put out so much better shit than that though. You know, like,
right.
But yeah, it makes me happy that people connect with it for sure.
But that also says something about your songwriting. I mean, it doesn't take, you know, $1 million budget and the best gear and the best equipment and the best microphones to make a record that streams, you know, 17 million times.
Totally. Yeah, man. It means a lot to me. And really what's cool is the stories that I get of the role that the record has played in people's lives. And just, it's so crazy to me that you can make something and then it goes out and just has a life of its own and like does different things to different people. It's just the craziest, coolest thing in the world to me, you know?
That's awesome. When you put that out, did you tour it right away or how did, like, and
dude, we just toured nonstop from pretty much when the Story of You came out till the fall of 2017. I mean, dude, there was like 3 years where I don't feel like I had more than 3 weeks off and we were playing for nobody.
Just across the country. Yeah. That's
I've heard. Just grinding.
Yeah. Wow. When did you start seeing real traction with that record? Like,
well,
the streams stuff.
We made a record called Pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
And right after we put it out, we got asked to do 3 tours with Michael Franti. Well, I guess technically one tour, but it was broke into 3 big chunks.
That's huge.
It was really huge for us. And then in between that, we're doing tours with Trevor Hall too. So we do like 4 weeks with Michael, 2 weeks with Trevor, 5 weeks with Michael, 3 weeks with Trevor. So we had this 1 year that was just like nonstop. And then
you're probably playing to huge crowds too at that point, right? I mean, opening up those artists.
And Franti, still kills it. But like, we were playing big theaters, you know, a couple, 3,000 people a night.
Wow.
Wild for us, you know.
What was that first time like going out there? I mean, you said you're playing to like nobody and then now you're playing to 3,000 people. Was that pretty, were you nervous or was it just super exciting?
A mixture of both. You know, for me, Franti was just always such a, you know, as someone that loved hip hop, loved political activism, loved punk rock, and also loved singer-songwriters. He was just like that perfect amalgamation of all those things, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just really looked up to him. So, I mean, there was definitely a level of, after the first show, we were like barbecuing out by his bus. And it wasn't even the show itself. It was just like sitting there like, fucking barbecuing by Michael Franti's tour bus on tour with this motherfucker right now.
Yeah,
you know?
That's crazy. My God. That's amazing.
But yeah, you know, it was cool. It was really, it got us really comfortable to crowds. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that next year we went out and booked a bunch of, like 300 person rooms and sold them all out.
Wow.
Yeah. It was so rad, man. We've been really blessed at our support, the support that we've gotten. And that time with Franti, I think just really, A, got us used to playing in front of a bunch of people, but it's also really cool to see how cool it can get if you keep working. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where it's like, nah, dude, I have a guitar guy, I have a monitor guy, I have a sound guy, I have an assistant, I have a trainer. You know, you're just like, damn, son, this is so cool.
<You know? laughs> Right.
Catering every day. It's just like, oh, man, you can make this real comfy.
Right. Beats driving around the country playing to nobody, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sleeping on floors, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Always sleeping on floors.
How did you get the Franti gigs? Do you remember?
It's my favorite story of my career.
Okay. I want to hear it.
All right. So, we had played, have you ever heard of the venue in St. Pete, Florida? It's called Janus Live.
I haven't.
So it's an outdoor venue, but it's like blocked in by these kind of taller buildings. So it feels like you're at like a block party.
Oh, that's cool.
But it's huge. It holds a few thousand people. But what's cool about the venue is that there's a balcony over it. Mm-hmm. And the green rooms are up on this balcony. So like no fans can get to the green room. But we had played there before and they were doing this Franti show. And the promoter reached out like, hey, Franti's not touring with support. Would you guys want to do this show. And I was like, okay, that's Florida, one show. I think they're offering us $500. But I was like, in my head, I was like, there's no way Franti's going to hang out in his green room if we're playing and not come out to the balcony and watch us. Like,
right.
Why wouldn't he come out to the balcony?
Sure.
So I was like, took this gamble that like he was going to come out to the balcony and watch us and just fall in love with us and ask us to tour the country with him. So I spent all but $37 to get us down there. I rented a small compact car. We got in contact with some dude via Instagram and drove to a trailer park to get a drum kit. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it was like a clown car with a drum kit, three dudes in it. And, but we played that show, man. We played our asses off. And, I remember right after the set, his monitor guy is coming over and like tearing stuff down. He's like, dude, Michael was up there dancing the whole time you were playing. And I was like,
yes.
Let's not get too excited. But then we got to play two more shows with him that week in Florida. And, the next day, when we got to the venue, I was like, hey man, I'd love to get up and spit a verse with you. And he was just kind of like, cool. So I was like, oh man, well that didn't go well. But then during sound check, he just goes, Drew. And a dude comes up and hands me a mic and I'm like standing in the middle of this giant ballroom floor and he's like, spit a verse.
Oh man.
And luckily I had one. So like I just went in. and then like a week after those shows, oh, the other thing, what's funny is he told me, I thought it was because he was so impressed with our music, but whenever we play bigger shows like that, I stand outside the venue and hustle CDs.
Oh, that's smart. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when he was walking across the catwalk, he saw me doing that. And he later told me, like, that was when I was like, yeah, when I helped this dude.
Oh, that's awesome. He showed that you were hungry for it.
Totally. So about a week after those shows, man, we got the email and got asked if we wanted to do all these dates and...
Wow, that's exciting, man. That's so rad. And at that point, you had two records out, too. You had Pyramids and The Story of You.
Yep, Pyramids. And, it was funny because Pyramids wasn't out yet when we played those shows in January with him, but we brought it with us, and I was handing it out for free.
Oh, smart. Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, it was cool timing. But, yeah, by the time we were touring with him, we had two records out, and... Yeah, it's crazy.
That's huge. That's huge. And then a couple of years later, you put out Culture. That was the next record.
Yeah, man. And it like
tell me about that album.
I self-funded it. I put almost $40K into it.
Oh my!
And it really meant a lot to me, man. I thought it was the coolest thing that I had ever made. There was, you know, it was like right after the election. And I just kind of wanted to make this timestamp thing. So if my kids or any, or, you know, if someone was like, man, what was it like in 2016, 2017, I could be like, boom.
Yeah. Here it is. You know,
yeah. It didn't come out till 2018, but yeah, I mean, I made the track list. So like the most political songs were the first four. I think that hurt us.
You said that hurt us?
Hurt us, yeah. I think people listened to it and were like, oh man, I just kind of, because people I think kind of got used to the like feel good self-empowerment shit.
Sure.
So they're like, oh, I don't, you know, at least that's what I think happened, but maybe it just it wasn't as cool as I thought it was. But I was really proud of the guitar tones on that record, even if we're putting everything aside, man. I was really stoked on all the sounds in that record. But yeah, I really love that record.
And that came out in 2019, it came out?
18 or 19, yeah.
Oh, okay. And were you? Did you tour that record as well?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yep. And where were you guys when, like the world kind of closed down in 2020? Like, were you touring that album, or were you working on the new record coming out?
No, so I knew we were going to make a new record, but my thought was... You know, we had this whole year of touring set up, like all the way to the end of the following fall.
Wow.
So my thought was like, well, maybe at the end of that fall tour, we'll just go right into the studio or do what we did with Culture, which is like, you know, if we had 2 days off, Carl and I would do guitars and bass and vocals here and there on certain songs. And then we do drums in a studio. I knew we were going to make a new record, but we were so busy. We would have been so busy. I wasn't sure how it would go, but me and my manager had made goals for 2020. And by the second week of February, we had accomplished all those goals for 2020. And tickets were selling really well for all of our shows. And then COVID hit, which at first was a huge shock, you know, and it was like, I remember the day really well because we had an epic powder day here. So I was skiing. And I remember on my way up to the mountain talking to my manager, and he's just like, I don't know, man, it's looking weird. I think we'll be able to pull it off. You know, it sounds like Seattle and San Francisco are down to do 200 person shows. And I was like, okay, cool. Whatever we got to do, you know, like we got a lower cap. That's fine. Mm-hmm. And then about halfway through the day, I remember at one point I was like skiing through the trees with my phone wedged in my helmet. Like, yeah, whatever guys, just tell me what's going on. But by the time I got to my truck, my manager and agent called me on the same call. And I was like, I knew it was bad news.
So you're like, both of you guys are three-way calling me?
But I took it really well, man. You know, my son, I had just had a bunch of time at home with my new baby.
That's good. Yeah.
And that week it had been hitting me like, man, I just am not ready to leave yet. Cause we had bonded, you know. Do you have any kids?
Yeah, I have two.
Okay. So, you know, when they're real little, it's like, you're just kind of an auxiliary parent. Cause mom's
Right. You're like, am I really important here or what?
Yeah, no, you're not. And then that 2-year-old, you know, that right before two and moving forward, they realize like, oh, dad's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife is a psychotherapist, so she works full time. So I was a full time stay at home dad. So we were just getting really tight. So really wasn't ready to leave. So I took it on the chin pretty well, man. You know, I was just like, okay, you know, I'm doing okay from streaming. I'll just stay home with my family.
Yeah, you get to stay home with your kid. That's awesome. But yeah, I mean, obviously we all didn't realize how long that was going to be, but
no, I was like, yeah, that's cool, man. We'll just hit festival season. No problem.
Right. Right. Yeah. And then that came and went. Well, hopefully you can hit the next festival season. That's what they're saying. October. Yeah, yeah. But
Hopefully fall is, it seems like everyone's pretty optimistic that fall is going to happen.
Yeah. I don't know how bad, what the capacity will be at that, but I'm sure like, you know, Bonnaroo probably won't happen, but you know, obviously probably 300 cap rooms might open up. That would be dope.
Great for us.
Yeah, exactly. That's awesome. And then, well, okay. So I did see your side of Side One Dummy, right?
Yeah, man. Huge deal to me.
That's a huge deal to me that you are, because that's so dope. I mean, growing up, those are the bands that I like the most. You know, Anti-Flag was on the label. Yep. You had Casualties, Gaslight Anthem,
Bouncing Souls.
They've just put out so many rad records over the course of the years. And then I saw that you were signed there and I'm like, whoa, like that's so rad. And even still nowadays, I mean, they have that band Pup is on that label.
I fucking love Pup, dude.
Oh, have you seen the video they did when the live streaming started?
Yep.
Where they all played at the same time and they're like, this is why all these are fake. And it was just this obscene sound of noise is going all over the place. Like,
I just saw they did a Tiny Desk too. And the guy that like sets up the Tiny Desk, they wouldn't turn their instruments down in the living room. Once everything was set up and sound checked, he just hung outside while they played because it was too loud.
That's funny. Yeah. That's awesome. So is this a recent signing, or did they put the other records out?
No. We started talking. You know, I first met the Side One guys in 2018. I was in LA doing some shit, and I don't remember what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But they asked if I'd go to lunch with them, and I just really liked them as dudes. And we just kind of kept in touch, and then it was really weird timing, man. There was one morning where I had a serious conversation with my manager of like, all right, dude, if we have this time off, we have to make a record. Mm-hmm. So let's really start getting the think tank going of like, of how we're going to make it happen, you know, and whether I want to keep self-funding stuff or do we start fishing for a label deal. I shit you not, man. Thomas called me, the GM of Side One called me like an hour and a half later and was just like,
wow.
Yeah, man. And he was like, dude, we've been looking at your streaming data. And I think you're ready for an actual deal with Side One. And we started the process and they were so cool. They let me have creative control. They were so fucking cool, man. Like,
that's so rad. Easy to work
with. And for me, like you said, you know, I grew up listening to all those bands. Like, if the joke that I always tell to Bill, and Joe, the founders of the label, I'm like, dude, if you rode a skateboard in the early 2000s, like, you fucking knew who Side One Dummy was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you did. That's so true.
And he's like, man, my life is complete. You know, like, that's all I ever wanted.
Yeah.
So it was a really big deal to me. And they were so cool to work with. So how we did it was Carl and I kind of started with, you know, like, I have really nice recording equipment myself. So does Carl. So I recorded like acoustic guitar to a click and started getting like scratch vocals down. And then he did bass. And then I flew everyone out to Montana because the record is just so Montana vibey that I wanted to make it here.
That's awesome.
I didn't want to go to LA or go to some city that was like locked down and being weird. I just wanted to like have it be out here.
Sure.
So flew everybody out here. And we rented this awesome house in Paradise Valley and turned the barn into a studio.
That's dope.
It was so badass, man. And the days were just like, everyone was one take and shit. Like, you wouldn't believe, man.
Wow.
You know, like, it was so fucking smooth. So we had some time to just like dick around, you know, we got the boys out on the river, but it was cool, man. Everyone really sunk into the Montana vibe and it was really cool too, because we hadn't seen each other in 6 months, which is so weird for a touring band. You know, it's usually when we say bye to each other, we're like, see you, dude, get the fuck out of here. I'll see you. But we were just so happy to see each other, you know?
That's awesome. So are they're putting out this new record then?
Yep.
The one that you guys have been working on. Awesome. And then you've released one song. Is the title of the record going to be called Forever and Ever Amen as well?
Or is no, that just so that track? that was just like a side idea. You know, a few tours ago, the last tour that we did, my mom was coming to a bunch of shows and she really raised me on old country.
Mm-hmm.
So before we left for that tour, I was like, you know, what's an encore I could do that would make my mom cry? So I picked that. It's a cover of an old Randy Travis song.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and people really dug it. So I was like, oh, well, I'm going to we should record a version of this. And when we told Side One about it, they're like, fuck, we'll put it out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so our first single from the record hasn't even come out yet. It comes out this week. Holy shit.
Oh, rad. That's awesome. Okay, so that's a cover. And then you did another cover, right? A Taj Mahal cover?
That came out? So while we had the barn, man, we just blew through everything so quick. And we had a filmmaker and photographer, my boy Grayson, with us. And we were like, dude, let's just set everything up and do some takes. So we did some covers. We did some originals. But we're not releasing any of those. Those are just videos.
Yeah, I saw the video, the one for the Taj Mahal cover. So that was where you guys recorded the record.
Yeah, that was the barn. Yep.
Oh, cool. Okay, now it's all coming. It makes sense now. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love the teaser video you did as well. For the record where it's like about a minute long and it kind of show you're like fishing and then it shows you training. Like, that's such a dope video.
Yeah, man. Grayson did a great job. I love him so much. And, he's a really great photographer and he pretty much was like, dude, I know enough about video editing. I'm pretty sure I can do all the videos for this record. And I was like, fuck it, let's do it. So he's doing all the music videos too.
Wow.
Which the first single is called All Right Now, which is the title track for the record. So that video will come out at some point too. I'm so brain dead on the release schedule. I've been told it like 100 times too. But
all good. It's all good. That's rad. So, but the when's the four, so the first single is coming out in a few days or a week or so. And then you don't know exactly when the full record will be.
So it goes sometime in June. Fuck, man, I should know this stuff. But it's like every 5 weeks, a single will come out, and then the record will release in June.
Awesome. And hopefully by then, people will be able to tour shortly after that.
Yeah, we're hoping, you know, I mean, man, I just, even if we could just play a handful of outdoor shows, I just want to play music with my friends again, man. You know, especially, it's exciting when you're releasing a record, man, and everyone's so hyped on the new music, and we love playing it. So it's just like, man, just want to go do it.
Yeah, I know. That's what I know. I feel bad. I saw a lot of these artists, or a lot of artists are having, you know, they're holding the record or not putting it out because, like, I can't tour it. But, you know, and then at what point, it's been a year, do you just go, you know what, I'm going to have to just put it out. So,
yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of bands, you know, I had a couple friends that had records that were, you know, a 2 year release plan or whatever that came out in March of last year. And they're just like, well, I mean, we can't just not put it out. Like,
right.
It's everything's just, been, everyone's been hired. Everything's been done. Like, so yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. It's just unfortunate, but well, that's awesome that you're able to, you know, get your band together and record a whole record and do that, especially in Montana. That's amazing, man.
Yeah. It was beautiful, man. It really went perfect. Couldn't have been, it was exactly how I hoped it would be.
That's great. That's great. And then I'm just curious, how long have you done the MMA stuff? Like, is that something you've always been training for all while touring and playing music? Well, seems like about a bit.
For the past 4 years. And usually when we train, I try to set up our touring schedule with our agent. So, you know, wherever we have our like Sunday, Monday, Tuesday off, it's a city that I have a gym family at, you know, where I've trained before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a huge part of travel for me. You know, I have these like little pockets of fight families all over the country. And like when I tour, that's when I get to see them, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah, man, I really love it. It's done a lot for me. You know, I'm hurt all the time, which is a bummer. But that's the part my wife hates. But yeah, man, I love it. I love the sport. I love training. I love going to fights. I love watching fights. And yeah, in March we have at my gym, we have like 5 or 6 guys that are all fighting. So I'll get a corner, a few of them. And yeah, man, it's a huge part of my life. It's definitely music, family, and fighting are pretty much my things. So.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's cool. I'm glad you're able to do that too, especially with COVID. I mean, I would think that's, you're right, you know, up there.
Couldn't be any closer, yeah.
Right. So I'm sure there's COVID tests and all that fun things that you have to deal with.
Well, it's been wild, man, because, you know, COVID has been, we had a pretty big spike here for a while where everything was shut down, but it's actually been really mellow here, you know, and we have not had, I don't actually, you know, I have friends that own gyms all over the country and I don't know anyone that's had an outbreak. It's kind of the thing of like, A, you get your temperature taken when you're coming in, and obviously sanitation is like through the roof now, but
sure, of course,
a huge part of it is too, man, is it's like, dude, if you even think that you have allergies,
you're not come
to the fucking gym.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, we haven't seen, I don't know any gym owners that have had breakouts, and I know, you know, there's gyms all over the country popping. So
that's cool.
I think a part of it might, you know, too, is health, maybe, I hope, you know.
Right.
But yeah, it's a weird, weird time, man. I hope the vaccine helps, and I hope it you know, just gets the world back to a little bit more sense of normalcy.
Yeah, I know. Everyone's ready for it, man. So hopefully we'll keep an eye out for that October. Hopefully people are talking about. So
that's what we're planning for, is October, November tours. So
there you go. Well, hopefully, I did see that you're supposed to play I'm in San Diego. You're supposed to play at the Soda Bar. It looks like a March, but that didn't obviously happen.
No, man. And you know what's a bummer about that is that was one of the shows that sold out like 2-3 months in advance.
Oh, that's,
and it's just been rescheduled like 3 times now, you know. Oh, so man. I just feel bad too for everyone that bought tickets, because it's like, do you get your fucking $23 refund, or do you just be like, no, just let me know when it's actually gonna happen?
You know? Like, I'd rather just do the latter, you know what I mean? Let me know. I want to be there, but you know.
Yeah,
at one point you'll be able to.
Totally. I've been blessed to get to do some socially distant stuff, which has been kind of fun. You know, the music bodes well to do solo.
Right.
Like what you're saying, as far as people being ready, man, we sold hundreds and hundreds of tickets in Salt Lake where, you know, in like 24 hours, I was going to do one show. And within 24 hours, we had three sold out.
Whoa. That's huge.
Man. Yeah, totally. So I think people are just like amped and ready and just like, whatever, man, if I got to sit at a table and wear a mask, what the fuck ever. Like,
right.
Just, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's cool that you've been able to do that. What about like live streams or anything like that?
You know, man, because I have the most spread out band ever. I always joke when people are like, where are you guys from? I always just say America.
there you go.
I'm in Montana, bass players in Minneapolis, guitar players in Charlotte, drummer lives in Brooklyn.
Oh, wow. You guys are you are pretty spread out there.
Yeah, we just need someone from SoCal and we've got like every region covered. But so, yeah, I did a live stream to raise some money for the boys.
Okay.
Initially, but I feel like it just got so congested and convoluted so fast that it was like, man, I don't want to do another live stream. You know,
right.
For a while I was like hopping on Instagram live and playing my guitar for free of just like, hey guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit here and play my guitar and sing songs anyway. You want to watch?
Sure. You know? That's cool. Yeah. Totally. Right on. I know. Obviously. Yeah. Like you said, it was really oversaturated in the beginning and then it kind of thinned out. And I think people are just like, okay, we get it. Like you're playing, you know, it's like, we want to see you in person and play. And hopefully that'll be sooner than later.
Yeah. Yeah. I think people are ready, you know? Yeah. It's just crazy, man. I was really hoping that festival season would happen just cause it's outside, you know, but it's not looking like it. Lots of festivals moving to 2022. So.
Sure. Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll see, but dude, thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate it. This has been awesome.
Yeah, man. Likewise.
I have one more question for you before I let you go. I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
Surround yourself with good people. Don't party. You see that, you know, I feel like there's this time period where you have this little window to get shit off the ground. And you really can't be distracted. And I think the number one distraction during that phase is drugs and alcohol. You know, and for me, my biggest thing has always been discipline, man. I take time every day to either work on my craft or work on my business. So yeah, man, that discipline is key, you know, and the more you can implement it in every area of your life, the more it'll work for your business, and be patient, you know, like you never know what the fuck it's going to be. You know, the song I Am that has, you know, 6.5 million streams on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I almost didn't put that on that little bedroom recording record because it felt too vulnerable. It felt like an overshare. And I just didn't particularly think it was that good of a song. And that song has changed my life, you know, so just be patient, man. You never know what people are going to like or not. Thank you.